bring this meeting to order. This will be our first meeting of this of the second half of the session here for Senate Labor and Commerce. It's Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. Present today are Senator Stedman, Senator Michicki, and myself, Senator Dunleavy. We have a quorum. We're going to be hearing two bills today. First will be SB 61, a bill relating to the Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank, also known as CFAB, and Senate Bill 58, a bill relating to canceling insurance on certain abandoned properties. 58, we heard very briefly at the end of the session, and I think Senator Michicki was handed the gavel during that meeting. It was, again, towards the end of the session when some of us had to be up in finance. So, again, if you could turn off your cell phones, silence your cell phones. And since we're starting off for the year, we have our Senate Records Secretary, Carrie Cooper-Ryder, and Claire Gross, our LIO operator. And what was the other part of your title, Claire? Teleconference operator. Well, thank you. So with that, we're going to take a look at SB 61. It's a bill sponsored by Senator Coghill. This is the first hearing on the bill. And I believe it's going to be Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill, and Lee Klingert with CFAB will be also speaking to the bill. So if Jordan could come up, please, state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Sure. So it's Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for hearing the bill today. Senate Bill 61 deals with the Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank, otherwise known as CFAB. So CFAB was created by the legislature in 1980 with $32 million in seed money. And because there was a need for financing the commercial, agricultural, and fishing industries. And because of the state's investment in CFAB, there were certain restrictions that were put in place on their operations, and those restrictions were put in place in statute, such as limits to the size of loans and the type of loans that they could give. And so given that the state no longer has an investment in CFAB, and considering that it is a private bank, it is appropriate that some of these restrictions be removed from statute.
Can I interrupt you just for a moment, please, Jordan? I just want to let the record show that Senator Olson arrived at 136.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Continue, please.
So Senate Bill 61 seeks to extend some of the same loan options that are already available to the fishing and agriculture industries and extend those options to the tourism and natural resource development industries. It does this by removing dollar restrictions and also providing loan options for non-resident owned businesses whose facilities are located in Alaska and who employ Alaskans and provide economic development within Alaska. Senate Bill 61 expands CFAB's small loan program to include commercial agriculture, not just fishing. The bill also increases the maximum size of these loans and increases the amount of total capital that CFAB can allocate to the small business, to the small loan program. Senate Bill 61 also deletes the provision relating to board compensation and also deletes the statute that prohibits them from having a lobbyist. These are decisions that, you know, any other private organization would simply make in their bylaws. Instead, CFAB has these restrictions built into law. So at this point, I'd be happy to either, you know, go through the bill section by section or answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for members of the committee at this point? There'll certainly be questions down the road here, but go ahead. Continue, please.
So Section 1 of the bill removes dollar limitations for loans used by individuals for tourism within the state. That would be subsection 4, and that would be on page 2. Subsection 5 removes dollar limitations for loans being used by corporations, partnerships, or limited liability companies for tourism within the state. In a similar vein, subsection 6 and 7 removes dollar limitations for individuals or corporations for natural resource development. Subsection 8 on page 3 clarifies that a person receiving a loan for capital investment or operating capital to a shore-based fish processor, timber processor, agricultural processor, or harvester must meet all requirements except for residency and resident ownership requirements. Subsection 10 on the same page adds new loans for non-residents for tourism-related operations and natural resource operations to loans secured by liens subordinate to valid first liens and security agreements granted to another creditor. Subsection 12 adds new loans to non-residents for tourism-related operations and natural resource exploitation to provisions for CFAB to participate with another bank without the obligor being a member of CFAB. Subsection 13 allows CFAB to participate in loans with other lenders to non-residents, whether or not the obligor is a member of the bank. Subsection 15 adds a new section, that's at the very bottom of page 3, adds a new subsection that allows for non-residents to receive loans for tourism-related operation, provided that that operation has bricks and mortar here in the state. Subsection 16 adds another subsection as well that allows for a corporation with non-resident majority ownership to receive loans for tourism-related activities, again, provided that facility of the operation be here in the state. Subsection 17 adds a new subsection that allows for non-residents to receive loans dedicated to the exploitation of natural resources, provided, again, that a facility be in the state. And Section 18 adds a new subsection that allows for a corporation with non-resident majority ownership to receive loans dedicated to the development or exploitation of natural resources, provided that a facility is located in the state.
If any members have questions, just let us know.
I'm almost done here, Mr. Chairman. Section 2 includes commercial agriculture among industries where non-members are eligible to receive small loans, with the intent of facilitating development in geographical areas not conducive to normal lending activities. Section 3 increases the allowable size of small loans. We increase that from $25,000 to $50,000. Section 4 increases the proportion of the bank's total capital that can be allocated to those small loans. Section 5 establishes a new subsection allowing for a list of voting members of the bank to be given a list of the candidates seeking a position on the board of directors.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Excuse me. Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I just noticed under Section 4, Jordan, that in that section, so obviously in a bank you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, right? So that calls for an amount that may not exceed 25% of the total capital of the bank. It used to be 8. And if you notice in Section 14, they try to limit the total assets of the bank to cumulatively involving less than 20% of any particular commercial fishery. So do you know why they went above that percentage for that section?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I don't, though I would defer to the president of CFAB, Lee Klinger, who's here in the room.
At this point, if Ms. Klinger could come up and sit next to Schilling and identify yourself for the record, maybe we can get some of the questions asked.
Thank you. Lee Klinger, President of Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, or CFAB.
Senator Machicki, question?
Well, we chatted. She's a smart lady. I think she probably, do you want me to repeat it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, under Section 4C, where it does increase from 8% to 25%, and just for disclosure, we chatted a little earlier. I was just a little concerned making sure we didn't get too concentrated in one area. Do you know why that goes above that 20% sort of written rule in Section 14?
Yeah, through the chair. The answer to that is that it's still under the 20% cap because these are, well, a portion of it would be, as far as the fisheries are concerned, because the small loans still relate to the individual fishery. So you'd have that 20% limitation in the fishery part. The increase was done because the small loan amount we have now is $25,000, so we're pretty much doubling it to $50,000. These are loans that we already make. The purpose of that part of the statute is to allow us to make them to the smaller operators who don't wish to become, or it's the cost prohibitive to become members of the bank. That's the only real exception or change to what those loans do as opposed to the loans that we currently make. It means that you don't have to actually become a member because CFAB is a cooperative, so when you borrow from us, you have to be a member. It affords us to be able to make those loans in a more cost-effective fashion. Is that answer?
Follow-up.
Yes, Mr.
Chairman. And so it's extremely unlikely that you're going to give a quantity of 25% of $32 million in $50,000 increments. Is that sort of what you're saying? That would be extremely improbable.
Yes.
Because $50,000 is the max.
The maximum to the individual, yes.
Okay.
Questions for members of the board? Or excuse me, committee? I have a question. By opening the door up to non-residents, mm-hmm. are we creating competition for in-state residents to access CAP?
I don't believe so. It doesn't exclude residents from continuing to borrow, and the option probably exists in other institutions already. CFAB kind of gets the ones that fall in the middle. So I don't believe that it's, you know, creating an issue for those.
And just a little bit more detail on why you made this move regarding out-of-state folks to be able to receive capital.
Through the chair. The reason for that is we have occasions primarily where we have corporations that are established, and it could be family corporations, and it's done because that's more of a financial structure that works. Mm-hmm. And it may be that the portion of the family exists in the state of Alaska and operates the entities, but yet part of them are outside, or it could be a partnership or other structures, and so we're not able to lend to them under the residential restrictions because it is not 100% Alaska resident. So this way it limits it to you have to have a facility, you have to build, and it has to be for the purpose of enhancing or building that structure in Alaska.
Okay. Did you want to continue?
So finally, I'm not sure if I covered Section 6, but it repeals restrictions on board compensation and repeals the prohibition of CFAB having a lobbyist. And then Section 7 just establishes an immediate effective date.
Questions from members of the committee?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Chicken.
Is there sort of something here that we may not be, what, to your knowledge, was the reason for CFAB not being able to have a lobbyist in the past?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. My understanding is this was legislation that was introduced by, I think, then Senate President Drew Pierce that pretty much grabbed all, at the time, government-sponsored entities, and at the time, the state had dollars still in CFAB. They still had an investment in CFAB, and so that has since been paid back.
Okay. And I have one more question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
So the seed money back in 80 was $32 million. Just in the little bit I know about banking, and I understand this is sort of more of a co-op. Is there a reason why the principal doesn't grow that would be able to serve more Alaskans in the future? I think you have $33 million at this point.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, if I'm understanding the question correctly as to why we may not be larger than we are, or we don't have more capital, or well, the actual capital, our assets are roughly $33, $34 million. The CFAB's capital is just under $20 million, and that basically belongs to our members. We have a finite market because we're limited to commercial fishing, agriculture, resource, and tourism, and they must be Alaska residents. So our market is defined. So that in itself limits our growth. The second would be competition, be it private or public. So that limits our growth. But I think that historically, the fact that we're still in existence, I think is pretty, given that we had been written off several years ago and that we kind of turned it around and still survive, I feel is kind of an accomplishment in itself. And each year what we do is we grow our portfolio and then, as we hope, people pay it back. And then we shrink again and then we grow our portfolio and then the loan payments come in and we shrink again. I believe if that answers.
Questions? Members of the committee? Is there anything else you want to present at this point?
No, sir.
So at this time, we'll open up for public testimony. We're going to continue to hear the bill, and we're going to be putting it off the side here. So we're going to open public testimony. Is there anyone that wishes to testify at this point? Anyone online? No one? Anyone in the audience? Okay, one last time for questions from members. We're going to keep public testimony open, and we're going to set the bill aside until Thursday. Senator Matricki.
Just for both of you, are you aware of any opposition from the previously represented groups in CFAB at all? Have you heard any negative comments, concerns?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Matricki, we have not received any opposition to date.
Okay.
Okay, with that said, we're going to set it off the side. We're going to keep public testimony open, and on Thursday we will continue with this bill. Any questions? We're going to take a brief at ease. We now turn to SB 58. This is a bill sponsored by Senator Egan. This is a bill we did have a brief hearing at the end of last session on this bill. Senator Egan, could you come forward, please? State your name for the record and begin your testimony. This is another bill that we'll hear today. We'll open up for public testimony and we'll put it off to the side for Thursday. So, Senator Egan.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Dennis Egan, representing District P. Senate Bill 58 is regarding abandoned properties. Senate Bill 58 clarifies that insurance can be canceled when a property owner abandons the property, thereby increasing a hazard covered by the insurance. Alaska Statute 21.36.210 lists allowable reasons for canceling personal insurance, including a grossly negligent act by the insured that increases a covered hazard and physical changes in the insured property that result in the property becoming uninsurable. As this statute is currently written, it's not clear whether these reasons would include abandonment of the property by the insured. Homeowners insurance is underwritten based on the property generally being occupied. An abandoned home greatly increases the risk of damage beyond what was contemplated in the insurance contract, including damage caused by vandalism, broken water pipes, and of course fire. Cancellation of insurance when the property is abandoned is necessary to manage insurance costs for all consumers. SB 58 clarifies that insurance on property that has been entirely abandoned can be canceled in Alaska, as it can be in all other states. However, it is important to note that Senate Bill 58 would establish the most restrictive circumstances in the nation. For instance, 30 days advance written notice must be given to the insured and any lender on record. In addition, insurance cannot be canceled where the owner demonstrates that the property is being reasonably maintained and monitored. SB 58 is responsible legislation, I believe, that helps manage claims costs, the risk pool, and the cost of insurance coverage for Alaska homeowners. And, Mr. Chair, I do have folks that would like to present testimony.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Egan, at this time?
And I want to thank the Vice Chair last year for originally hearing the bill.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Egan, as you look at some of the abandonment issues that we talked about last year, what about if a property has a pending mortgage on it and the bank is the ultimate one that holds the paperwork?
Mr. Winters, that is going to be providing testimony, can answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So at this time, if we could have Mr. Willis, State Farm, and Mr. Winters from Lesmer and Winters come up and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Oh, that's not supposed to do that. Pardon. A couple of notes. My name is Reuben Willis, and I'm here representing agents and myself.
With?
And I'm Reuben Willis with State Farm. I'm
Thank
an
you.
Agent. Thank you.
And my name is Sheldon Winters. I have a law practice here in Juneau. I'm what State Farm calls their Alaska State Retained Counsel, and I represent them and do some of their lobbying and reps that they work.
Thank you. Senator Olson, did you have a question for these folks?
If a person has a loan out on a property that they are there, how and it's obviously not in the local area, whether it's delinquent or not is not the issue, but whether if the how do you make sure that that property doesn't, that the whoever has the loan or has a vested interest in, they paid some down payment, I don't want to the bank, and the bank is holding the paperwork, how does that how does this abandonment portion figure into the equation there?
Senator Olson, through the chair, if I can take a shot at that.
Could you identify yourself again,
yes,
please?
Sheldon Winters.
Thanks.
There's two issues there, and first of all, the insurance company will have, obviously, the insured would be the owner, and of course they would provide the required notice of cancellation to the owner. With this bill, there's an additional requirement that's you don't see throughout the country, and it requires the insurance company to send out the notice of cancellation to any lender of record that the insurance company has. So there would be notice to that as well, which is an added protection that you don't see anywhere throughout the country. Of course, the insurance company has to have the name of the lender on file, otherwise there's no way to contact anybody.
Okay, continue, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
How many other states have got similar type legislation?
Senator Olson, through the chair, this is Sheldon Winters. You mean with respect to the lender?
Well, in respect to what this bill is purporting, because Alaska obviously is a very unique place. We're a rural state. We've got properties all over the state that may or may not be abandoned or considered abandoned. They may be considered abandoned by other people, but I don't think the owner considers them abandoned. Yeah. And so because of that, I think we're trying to protect some of those people that have a vested interest but just haven't been at the locale for a long period of time.
I appreciate that. Senator Olson, my understanding is that every state has a cancellation statute, and they range from being very vague and general to with language to the effect of if the risk increases, the insurance can be canceled, to more specific using if the property is abandoned or vacant, the insurance can be canceled. Alaska's follows some of the states right now as it stands. In no state, and of course State Farm is the largest insurer of homes in the country, we do all 50 states, in no state have we had any problem or concern with the ability to cancel entirely abandoned property. In Alaska, this arose when we were looking at our policy and making sure that it complied with statutes, and the question was asked of the Division of Insurance, would the statute as it currently stands allow cancellation of an entirely abandoned piece of property? And the answer was, well, it doesn't say the word abandoned. If you took a strict interpretation, you would not be able to cancel it, even if the person just basically threw the keys on your desk and said, I'm out of here and I'm not doing anything to take care of it. So to answer your question, Senator Olson, I'll try to summarize it. All the state statutes in the other states have, some are very vague, some are very specific, but Alaska is the first time we ever heard anywhere in the country that we could not cancel insurance on a completely abandoned property. And when we do our prepared remarks, I'll address some of the protections that we built into this statute that are nowhere else in the country that make sure that this really only applies to the entirely abandoned, they've gone, they're not living in there, nothing in the house situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for members of the committee?
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
So let's put a little scenario together and just the hypothetical, use the late 80s, okay? A lot of rentals, empty, long period of time. If I were the owner of one of those rentals and it remained abandoned, and it would be a difficult time to get new coverage in that situation. How would this bill affect me?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, it would not affect you at all. And there's two things that come to mind. First of all, this only applies to personal insurance, I believe, if I'm right, that the definition of personal insurance means if you have a rental apartment that's four or more units, it does not even fall within that. But if it's under that and it is a personal insurance, entire abandonment needs to be is defined as nobody living there as intended in the insurance contract. So if you have a rental contract, of course there's going to be times when it's vacant. It has to be not maintained or cared for. And so, again, the whole idea is truly that the property that you've insured is entirely abandoned and no one is there and maintaining it. As Mr. Willis, I think, was planning on talking about, it's counterintuitive to think that an insurance agent or an insurance company is going to want to cancel insurance on a piece of property. That's their product. That's what they sell. That's what they do. And each insurance policy is renewed every year. So they can non-renew every year for any reason. They renew the policy and could non-renew. So there's got to be something significant out there, and it's basically abandonment.
Questions from members of the committee? At this point, we'll open a public testimony. Do we have anyone online that wishes to testify at this moment? Anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Please state your name for the record again.
Name is Reuben Willis. I'm here. I am a local agent. Thank you for the time to testify. I'll keep my comments brief. I know this committee's time is important. Just a little about me. I've been an agent in Alaska for 28 years. Seven of those years as an office manager in an office in Anchorage. I went through the late 80s when properties were, as you described, abandoned, well, not abandoned, but there were problems with rentals and people walking away. 7 years I was an agent in Sitka and still have an active office there. And 13 years I've been an agent in Juneau and currently have a substantial staff and interest in Southeast Alaska. I am in support of this bill because I think it's extremely important that as an insurance company and as an agent representing and advocating for my clients, as well as the companies, that we have the ability to manage the risk. And when that risk changes substantially, it's appropriate that that cost is not passed on to good, actively living in and taking care of their homes and properties. As an agent, inherently, the products that I sell provides an income for me and my family. If I were to hear of a property that was potentially abandoned, I would do everything I could to make contact through the records and contact methods that I have, email, phone, if that failed, through mail, to reach the individuals and review with them what the status is and the condition of that home. So inherently, I do not want to cancel properties. But at the same time, I do want to make sure that the home is abandoned truly. Someone turns in the keys. They have no intent to maintain it or take care of it. We should have the opportunity to divest ourselves of that risk. Thank you very much.
Questions for members of the committee? Senator Olson.
So as you look at this time frame that you're talking about, you're saying a portion of time passes by before you haven't heard from them, then you try and get a hold of them by mail, then a portion of time after that you go ahead and try and give me some ideas. Is it months, years,
days? If I could, through the chair, Senator Olson, this is Reuben Willis, we have not yet canceled anyone because it's not been an option that we've had.
Sure.
If, in my experience, how we would discover something like this is either the individual themselves would come to me and say, Reuben, I'm letting you know I'm turning the keys in to the bank and we're not maintaining this property anymore. We're going bankrupt or we've had this or that or the other. That would probably and most likely be because I have a personal relationship with my insureds. And in my estimation, that would be the most likely opportunity we would find out about something. The only other way is if by chance I, because it's a relatively small town, I may become aware of it. And if I did, then I would make attempt to contact those individuals and resolve and find out if there's someone managing the property, a local friend or a neighbor or a family member or a realtor. And if that is, then the property would not be considered abandoned.
With all due respect, Mr. Willis, I'm not looking for what the scenario is. I'm looking for time frame so I can get an idea on when I can say to my constituent that, you know, we're putting this bill through and you only got this amount of time before they're going to consider your property abandoned.
I think I'll defer to Sheldon to answer that specific question.
Mr. Winters.
Sure. Senator Olson, through the chair, specifically with respect to time frame, if I could try to answer your question this way, the most time frame that's involved is a year,
sure,
because the policy is renewed and renewed.
That's fine.
I could probably limit it down to further than that, because when the policy is renewed, it's very doubtful that someone's going to be paying a premium and abandon that property the next day.
Sure.
So you've knocked off a month or two on that end.
Correct.
On the other end of it, on the nearer to the end of the term, mm-hmm, if the insurance company becomes aware that the property has been fully abandoned, rather than go through this process, they can just wait for another 30 days and not renew at the end of that thing. So you have a limited period of time. But there was some discussion, and I think I'm hearing your, I hope I hear your question right, Senator Olson, but there was some discussion early on about, can we put time frames on this so that people have some sort of guideline as what that
and
is.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Right. And the answer is to that is no other state does that. And the reason why they don't is you then become limited in terms of the precise situation. For example, in the middle of Fairbanks, when it's 40 degrees below zero out there, and somebody says, I am out of here, I am gone, that's when the property becomes abandoned. And that's when the insurance company, even from that point on, needs to put the 30-day notice, as is in the statute. So there's 30 days built in right there. But if we tack in an additional period of time and says, well, the piece of property has to be abandoned for 60 days, then it's too late, with all due respect, in the situation we're concerned about. And so the time frame, we gave that a lot of thought, but in looking at it and researching, we found out why no other state does it, because it's just too restrictive. So we did put in some with the realtor's assistants and who were expressing some consumer concerns. We really did narrow down this language. It's got to be entirely abandoned. That means nobody's living in it. There's no prop. There's nothing in it. And then even after the notice goes out, the owner or an agent of the owner, a real estate person, a personal representative can come back and show Mr. Willis or State Farm, actually, we are taking care of this, and it's not deemed abandoned. And I'll just throw in one last catch-all. It is hard to imagine a situation where an insurance agent is going to want to cancel a property when it shouldn't be canceled, that all these provisions and these protections go in the statute. But even if that happens, you have the Division of Insurance oversight. The Division of Insurance, if someone goes to them and says, and files a complaint and says, my property has not been abandoned, it shouldn't be canceled, they can step in and say, you're right. You know, State Farm, you shouldn't be canceling that property. I just do not see it going there for all the reasons we talked about.
Thank you, team.
Senator.
Mr. Willis, how many people besides Southeast Alaska that you have that are clients of yours that buy insurance from State Farm that are not on the road system?
Reuben Willis, through the chair, Senator Olson. I would in my, it's very little because agents concentrate on their local area, but for myself, I would probably say
a minimum
less than 25.
Okay, let's skip the scenario that Mr. Winters just talked about. So, since you don't have anybody from off the road system, essentially, if you had a house in Fairbanks in the middle of the winter, somebody decides to go to Acapulco for a major portion of the winter, but doesn't turn his keys in, has a friend to go ahead and decide, you know, tells him to kind of watch over this place. It's 40 below, as Mr. Winters talked about. And then all of a sudden things go catastrophic and you have these water, everything freezes up for some reason. I mean, that would be a time that you wish your competition had been insuring it, I would assume.
That is correct.
And so how do we make sure that is not going to be happening?
Senator Nelson, if I may address that.
Sure.
This bill does not allow an insurance company to cancel property in that scenario, because that would not be entirely abandoned, okay, under the definition of the statute. Secondly, this bill does not allow an insurance company to, after a claim is made, try to cancel the property. Okay, this is all about recognizing a piece of property that is no longer fits within the risk pool. And so I don't want to belabor a point too much, but all of our houses are pretty much in the same risk pool. You probably maintain your house differently than I do, and than Mr. Willis does, and than everybody else does. But the predominant factor in those is they are occupied to some degree or another to make sure there's at least some assurance that someone's turning the heat on at some point in time, and they fit in the risk pool. And that property is abandoned, and there's nobody home, there's nothing in there, there's no heat on, that has to be removed from the risk pool. That's all this bill is about. It's not about the going to Tahiti for 7 months or 8 months and having somebody watch your house. That's not abandoned. So we have those protections in there. We think they're adequate.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Matricki.
Just to, and not to beat this to death, or two things. First of all, people that can go to Tahiti for 7 months, I don't feel I need to look out for them anyway. The second is a legitimate question. Recreational cabins with no source of heat, sometimes no electricity other than a generator, are they always abandoned? Some are insured, typically at a very high rate. How do they fit into this category?
Senator Matricki, we put the language in here in the definition of entire abandonment to the extent there is even a policy that falls in this. But entire abandonment means the property is no longer occupied by the insured as defined by the policy. And what that means is if I come to Mr. Willis and I take out cabin insurance, obviously that means I'm going to be there once or twice a year at most, and it's going to be vacant the entire time. Mm-hmm. This statute does not allow Mr. Willis to then cancel my property midstream. Okay. It's defined by the policy and what you get. One final point, when I'm talking about a homeowner's, it does need to have somebody there or taking care of it, or if I'm gone, that sort of thing.
Additional questions from members of the committee this time? Are there any folks online? No. Any folks in the audience that wish to testify at this time? Public testimony? We're going to keep public testimony open. And on Thursday at 1:30, February 6th, we will hear both bills again. So again, public testimony will remain open until that time. And as of now, we will adjourn and be back on Thursday.